it was very important at this time where there's an anti-Black culture. It's been there for a while, but now it's being empowered by the White House. Now, more than ever, we need to be talking about these uncomfortable conversations, as you say. We need to be dispelling myths, and we need to be coming together to uplift Black brilliance, bring it together as community so that we can save lives.
And people know me as Tony Tidbit, and I always got something to say. You just shut me up. I was like, oh my God, mic drop. I mean, do we want to go on with the show?
We'll discuss race and how it plays a factor, and how we didn't even talk about this topic because we were afraid.
A Black executive perspective.
BEP is on fire. Our audience is growing fast and the impact is real. Now is the time for your brand to grow with us and reach a highly engaged, influential community with real spending power. Don't miss this moment. Email us today at media@tonytidbit.com. Let's make it happen and put you and your brand in front of the people that matter. We are coming to you live from the new BEP studio for another thought-provoking episode of a Black Executive Perspective podcast, a safe space where we discuss all matters regarding race, culture, and those uncomfortable topics people tend to avoid. I'm your host, Tony Tidbit.
And I'm your co-host, Chris P. Reed. Before we get started, we always like to remember to shout out our partners at Code M Magazine. Code M Magazine, whose mission is saving the Black family by first saving the Black man. Check them out at CodeMMagazine, 2Ms.com.
Definitely check them out. And today we want you to check this out because we're sitting with Kimberlyn Corbin, Chief Administrative and Financial Officer of the Greater Washington Urban League. From Wall Street boardrooms to leading one of the most historic civil rights organizations in America, Kimberly has built a career grounded in equity, empowerment, and unapologetic leadership. We're going to explore with her the journey as a Black women executive, the transformative work of the Urban League, and the bold new programs designed to strengthen Black families, empower youth, and dismantle systemic barriers.
Before we jump into the episode, Tuff, I want to give you a little baseline of who Kimberly L. Corbin is. She's Chief Administrative and Financial Officer for the Greater Washington Urban League, where she has been a driving force for over a decade. Since joining in 2014, she has helped steward the organization's growth by tenfold, which translates into managed grant funds increasing from $20 million to a whopping $200 million, all the while elevating the Urban League's brand and a human-centered programming. She is widely celebrated as a best-in-class transformational leader in her space, where she has been recognized as a 2024 Social Impact Woman to Watch by Nonprofit HR, and previously a 2021 National Urban League Program Innovation Award honoree. Prior to her nonprofit career, she spent 20 years in leveraged finance at GE Capital, American Capital Fieldstone, and Bankers Trust, supporting private equity-led buyouts. Kimberly's nonprofit leadership began as president and CEO of the National Black MBA Association. She holds an MBA from Harvard University School and a Bachelor of Science in Business Administration from Florida A&M University. Go Rattlers, right? But above all, she is a proud girl mom to her two beautiful daughters, Asetnia and Imani Isis. Kimberly Corbin, welcome to a Black Executive Perspective podcast.
Thank you, gentlemen. And I'm so honored that you would allow me to come and tell my story on your show and all the impact that you guys are having. I wish you so much blessings and love for what you're doing.
So I gave a little rundown. Thank you, my sister. I gave a little rundown of you and some things, but let us know, where do you currently reside? Where are you from? You know, a little bit more about your family.
Sir, so right now we've been in Silver Spring since 2004. Okay. And I work, you know, of course, the Greater Washington Urban League is in D.C. And so my kids, you know, are in college, and one is taking classes here at Montgomery County College. And my other one, my youngest, just went off to school at Berklee Conservatory in musical theater in Boston. Oh, so, yeah, we got lots going on in this family.
Absolutely. We see. And look, but at the end of the day, the mother is the one that's leading the chart.
Yes.
Okay.
That too. That was my calling.
Exactly. Well, you know, as Chris just went through your bio, my girl, you're just so, how should I say, accomplished. And you've had a great impact wherever you have been at. And obviously we're seeing that impact with your family as well. And so the question I have for you, look, at the end of the day, you're not sitting around not doing anything. You're traveled, you know, people are requesting you on multiple platforms. You are building something great in the greater urban Washington, D.C. area. So why did you want to come on the Black Executive Perspective podcast, talk about this topic?
First and foremost, to God always be the glory. There is nothing that comes out of me that he didn't put in me first. And I am simply a obedient servant to my Lord. But it was very important at this time where there is an anti-Black culture. It's been there for a while, but now it's being empowered by the White House. Now, more than ever, we need to be talking about these uncomfortable conversations, as you say. We need to be dispelling myths, and we need to be coming together to uplift Black brilliance, bring it together as community so that we can save lives.
And people know me as Tony Tidbit, and I always got something to say. You just shut me up.
That's it. Mic
I was
drop.
Like,
mic
oh,
drop.
My God, mic drop. I mean, do we want to go on with the show?
Yeah, we can end it.
We can end it right there. But all that being said, my sister, you definitely ready to talk about it. So you ready to talk about it?
I'm ready to talk about it. I'm ready to talk about it all.
All right. You already start talking about it, so let's finish talking about it.
So yes. I don't think I did you enough justice in just a little bit that I, you know, shine light on who you are as a person. But from a professional perspective, you have something that little can or few can really identify with, which is sitting on the corporate side and the philanthropic kind of civil side of things. And when you find people that are able to have those conversations and see it on both sides of the aisle, so to speak, what was something that took you out of the corporate and said, you know what, my heart, my passion, my history, my heritage, what drew you to the Urban League and wanting to do that route as opposed to what you had been doing previously that was so successful?
Yeah, so again, the older you get, the more in tune you get with your purpose in life. And I would hope that for everybody. Mm-hmm. My first career was about establishing social capital. It was establishing and breaking down barriers for Black women. So not a whole lot of Black women were in leveraged finance in my day, and there's still not a whole lot of us in my day. That gave me some credibility coming in the door. Not a whole lot of Black women have graduated with an MBA from Harvard. There's a whole lot of Black women who are top in their fields who have graduated from FAMU. So again, building up that credibility and also building up that skill set, that top tier knowledge opens up doors for me to break down barriers, right? So, but having said that, I was making money for everybody else but my community. That didn't fit with my soul. And I started to wrestle with myself. And there was a pivoting point where I didn't really understand how much of a pivotal point. We have these Black, you know, corporate America has these Black sessions, you know, and we all get together and we talk about how to help each other out, how to navigate racism in the own organization that we're working. Mm-hmm. Well, I had had enough after about 10 years at GE, and they have this session with the presidents across GE, and we get to ask them questions, all the Black people in the world. I'm like, hey, you know, you say that, and this was Jeff Immelt before he became CEO. Mm-hmm. And I decided to ask Jeff Immelt the year or two before he became CEO. You say that racism, we're getting better, and we're addressing it, and we're better than we were, but we still have things to do. I said, I keep hearing the same story every time we come to this session. When are we going to say something different? Now, this is a little 20-something-year-old black woman asking Jeff Immelt, who's the heir apparent to GE, to become the CEO, and I'm asking that question. I got some claps, but thereafter, I got some when you leaving.
It's time to rethink your protein. Agrilab's protein bars are crafted with high-quality protein, double the leucine, and enriched branched-chain amino acids, essential for optimal muscle recovery. Finally, a protein bar that works as hard as you do. So visit agrilabs.com and use the code BEP to get 20% off. That's agrilabs.com, promo code BEP.
I was no longer, you know, on this accelerated track to become one of their presidents. I was now on the accelerated track to get out of there. So that was one of those pivoting points. But it was a point in time where I would look around and I was disheartened. I was disheartened by the number of black folks who were senior, who were telling me to shut up. If I wanted to continue to be in that space and break barriers inside of corporate America, I had to shut up. That wasn't what God made me to be. There's other folks who were made to be diplomats. I was not made to be a diplomat. I was made to be a disruptor. I was made to disrupt the status quo for the benefit of our community. So that, and then the other piece of it is I'm PK, right? You know, at the end of the day, it's about saving souls and saving lives. I don't do that by making a private equity firm more money necessarily. The opportunity came to shift to actually saving souls instead of making more money. And I took it.
You know, let me ask you this. So number one, thank you for that. And obviously you took a hit. and to be fair, right? And if we could even do the monetary, you know, miss that you know, actually by saying that you actually didn't was able to gain, it would be tremendous, right? The question I have though, when they were saying you have to be quiet, why were they saying that? Knowing, and then before you answer, knowing that what you were saying was true, knowing with their own eyes that they didn't see a lot of change, knowing that the only way change is going to happen is people got to start speaking up and saying something about it, right? So why did they keep telling you that you have to be quiet?
Their personal security was more important than their purpose in life of making somebody else's better. And it's a choice that we all have to make. You know, are we going to look at, you know, what's your driver? What's your value system? And if your value system is to build financial security and financial wealth for your family so that you can send your kids to college and not have any challenges and things like that, that's your driver. That wasn't my driver. I don't put anything against folks who have that. That's your value system. My value system, it didn't resonate with me. If you are going to stay in that environment that remains anti-black and racialized, you have to be a part of the company. You have to toe the company party line. And they can't see you as a threat. They can't see you as a liability that could end up in a class action lawsuit. And if I was not, and so me speaking out in that way automatically targeted me or, you know, pegged me as a liability for the organization because I could be suing. I mean, the very next day or the very next week, should I say, I got called to the office of my president of my division and asked, do we really have a racial problem? I'm like, well, if we didn't, would you have me here in your office? Because I'm just a VP and you're the president. Would the president really summon a VP into his office if we didn't have an issue? Right? Because if what I was speaking wasn't the truth, you wouldn't have even thought twice about bringing me into your office.
Right.
But they were trying to fill me out. How much power did I know I had?
Did you see, before, Chris, I know you got a question, but before, I just want to jump in real quick. So when I was at the African American Film Festival this summer, they did, you know, they showed a bunch of little shorts of some of the new movies and documentaries that come out. Did you see the memo? You just said what time it was. Because that's exactly what happened. It's based on the book. I forget who wrote the book, but it's really, really good. We saw, you know, like 20 minutes of it. And you just described because that's exactly what happened to her in the memo, which is based on a true story.
And, you know, one of the things I would, you know, I tell folks that I learned from that is that your career is not yours when you work for corporate America. It's not yours. They decide, the organization decides who wins and who loses. And before I became extremely vocal about the racism that we are experiencing and also about the, you know, gender issues as well, I had been selected. I'd been promoted every 18 months. I was just given the Pinnacle Award, which is the top 10% performers in the entire company. I was on a trajectory to keep going. And then all of a sudden I started speaking up, and then all of a sudden you saw the signs.
Right.
One of the things in which they do, and that everybody, and we really need to examine this and we need to teach ourselves, is they begin to marginalize your performance.
There's no question. Me and Chris talk about it all the time, right?
So all
and
of
when
sudden,
you were perfect before, you were they gave you nothing but accolade. They were throwing grapes and roses in front of you.
I was in all the training rooms, had all the mentors, had all the support, and then all of a sudden, I wasn't getting support. I wasn't getting the training. I wasn't being allowed to be in the rooms to be discovered. I wasn't getting the polishing that they were looking for. So they withdrew their hand from
like their God.
And that was it. That was the end of, you know, that was, for, you know, became sort of became the end, the beginning of the end. But I was okay. After a while, I was okay with it. I left on my own accord.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
I didn't get pushed out. I left on my own accord. I got another job.
Yeah.
Right?
It's interesting how you put it, because it reminded me of a situation where I was in we bought a large company. I'm in a leadership program. And so they sent me to Denver to acclimate them to our ways. And I'm talking to the guys there. And they say, you know, the thing about this company is, you know, everything's financial, everything's this. And y'all, we was more about the customer and this and that and blah, blah, blah. And they go into this diatribe of how we're so different and how, you know, we're the bad guys. And I'm saying, if you just replace the word customer with shareholder, I think it's the exact same thing.
Any idea
of your sense of community wasn't their sense of community, because their community was insular. You know, it was insulated within those walls or whatever, and you seem to have a better, broader focus of community. How different was it when you got to the Urban League and you got a chance to step into what ended up being a greater community?
Whew, I will say, first of all, it is very different. and let me just say that. Very different. You know, I am, for one thing, and on the positive side, I'm very tied into the mission work. I am a missionary by heart. Not only a disruptor, but a missionary by heart. But all of a sudden, you are doing everything yourself. Right? So, and I really want everybody, when you see an executive director or leader in a nonprofit, please go hug them. Right. So, you know, I find it often interesting having conversations with my friends who are still in corporate and, you know, oh, we got finance people to do that. Oh, we got HR people to do that. Oh, no, my ops, VP of ops does that. I'm like, no, in nonprofit, you better know how to do it all.
That's right. That's just the bottom line.
I know how to do the accounting. I know how to, you know, write some policies for HR. I know how to sit down with my IT team and roll out a brand new IT. You know, I know how to sit down and develop a logic model for a new or theory of change model for a new program. Right. You got to know how to do all of it, because the other things, you can't teach what you don't know. So as a leader, you better be able to do that, because the capacity of what you're dealing with is like minuscule compared to what you have in the corporate world. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
So you got to do so much more with so little. And the need pulls on your heartstrings. So the other piece to this nonprofit is you have to pay attention to the mental health of your people like never before. Mm-hmm. Because these are folks who are seeing the carnage of racism. They're seeing the impact of generational weathering. They're seeing the impact and it pulls on your heart. So now you got a staff that has constantly got a beating heart and a hurting heart. So now what do? So a couple of years ago, we started and we now have free mental health therapy for our staff. They don't have to go through their, they can go to their, you know, if they want to get their own therapy, we have a great mental health. I mean, we have a great policy. Care First is really good on mental health. But in those instances, when they have a moment, we had one staff member who got a suicide call. Never had a suicide call. They're not a therapist. They're not a social work. They were case manager for this family and got a suicide call. Can you imagine how that affects them? So we have therapists. So there are so many different things that you have to be thinking about as a leader. One of those other things is we're not here just to sell a product or to provide a service. We're here to save a life.
Right.
And there's so much more that goes along with that. You cannot, there's so much more complexity to what you have to know to do to save somebody's life than to build a product.
Let me ask you a question, Tony. Let me jump in. Because she said something that really inspired me to really dig in and help her cast a light on something. As a nonprofit in general, you do have to wear many hats. But as a Black woman who is servicing the community as the face of the organization, it's not just hats, it's hearts. How do you navigate and incorporate that into the mission, beyond the mission statement, to your actions, to your activities? How do you juxtapose those things as you go through your day-to-day, knowing the bigger picture, as you said, that the on-earth kingdom building that you're responsible for? How do you equate that and navigate those waters?
Okay, so on the business side, what I try to do with all of my organizations that I've worked with is make sure that they're human-centered. Oftentimes, when you see some of our legacy businesses that are a little bit off track, it's because they got pulled into what does the money want, what does the power want, instead of what do the people need. And most of the time, or with all of the folks that I've worked with, I've always shifted the culture back to what do the people need. One, two, how did they get there in the first place? If we aren't doing root cause analysis and if we aren't doing lived experience driven, we aren't having an impact. So I would say that, one, I went from building a product and a service to actually having real impact and transformation in people's lives. Mm-hmm. Two, I always stress that what we do has to have a purpose. And so this tree of life came to me recently, and I'll give it to you quickly. The roots of a tree. Can you think about just the top of a tree with no trunk and no roots? Can you just think of a tree with, you know, all the branches and leaves and a trunk, but no roots?
Right.
So the life, the tree of life, really the roots are your value system. What do you value? That trunk being, what is it, is your specific purpose? With those branches being, what is the type of work that you were assigned, divinely assigned to do? And then what is the fruit, right? Mm-hmm. And all the different things. So for me, my fruit was humanity and Black women. Mm-hmm. And it was always infusing humanity in the way in which we make decisions, we treat each other. And on top of that, I nurture Black women because I wanted to be nurtured, right? I, you know, as a Black woman in this space, as a Black woman in any executive space, is tough, right? As I say, we always get called in to do clean up the mess, but we always are the first ones to go once the mess is cleaned up.
If you like what you hear and want to join us on this journey of making uncomfortable conversations comfortable, please subscribe to a Black Executive Perspective podcast on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hit subscribe now to stay connected for more episodes that challenge, inspire, and lead the change.
Right.
And so what I do with my staff is everybody gets a hug. Everybody gets love. And on top of that, for our staff, I look at their lived experience and make sure that we are looking at what they're going through. We've had people that have gone through lung transplants, people that have gone through cancer treatments, serious cancer treatments, people who have gone through massive losses of people and staff. We stop. We care. We care for them first so that they can keep caring for other folks. So for me, as a nurturer, Black woman, which is part of my role, believe me, I love and kiss on every single team member I have every single day that I'm in the office. And we treat each other with that. But be clear, that in of itself, that mama bear comes also with an expectation that you can bring and you will discover and find your Black brilliance and bring it to work. It's both. I don't just hug you and kiss you and want to have you be better. I also expect you to live up to that which was given to you, your talent, your brilliance. So oftentimes I get into this, okay, I'm going to hug you, but now I'm going to be like, listen, ain't you supposed to be doing X, Y, Z? Didn't God give you this talent? Didn't this organization say that we needed you? So it's both. You have to be able to do both. You have to be able to demand performance, to pull out the brilliance in people so that they can perform, but also you have to be able to nurture them into identifying and seeing their brilliance and getting them to see how it all fits together for the mission, for the good of the people that we serve. Right. And it is an art and a science, and some days I am that mama bear, and some days people call me something different.
Yeah.
You know, well, listen, Mama Bear. So to be fair, though, so you hopefully you got big arms because, you know, there's a lot of people across the country, Black women that need hugs.
Yes.
You know, with the current administration, they've 300,000 Black women have lost their jobs. OK. Yes. And they were talented and they were bringing it every day. OK. And they were the exception, not the rule. Right. So how does that in this type of climate? When you're still alone, you still have a job and you're still bringing it, you know, how do they deal with this and still be their authentic self and still strive and thrive in 25, knowing that at any moment, as you said earlier, you know, corporate America don't belong to them. You know, they belong to corporate America and they can get rid of them at any time. So what advice would you give them right now? Because they need a hug.
Yes. Hold on just a little while longer. As we say, as our anthem says, through many dangers, toils, and snares, we have already come. And we will come through this as well. What I would say to my sisters is that there are other sisters out here ready for you, ready to help you. One of the things that we want to help Black women do is monetize their knowledge for themselves. These are women who are well overqualified oftentimes for their job. They have more training, more experience, you know, top pedigrees that they're being let go. Mm-hmm. And we want to help them understand how do you monetize that knowledge for yourself. So really sharing the entrepreneurial spirit, giving them the courage to do that entrepreneur spirit. But the other thing is getting them to see that they can join forces and do it together. Mm. Like, I'm not naturally that, you know, entrepreneurial person, but better believe I got some partnerships going on right now with some other sisters who's pushing it. And like, come on, Kim, we can do this. We can uplift and we can teach Black women to monetize, how to monetize, how to leverage technology, how to leverage their background and monetize it for themselves. But I would just also say, be still. And know that that God is still in control. And whoever you pray to, right, know this ain't over. We have been through this before. I went through 2 years without a job, right? Almost lost everything. But today I still sit in the house that was in foreclosure.
I love it.
Let me ask you a question, because you said this and it resonated with me. The Bible encourages fellowship. It promotes and recommends fellowship. How do you get beyond embarrassment and get over yourself and lean into the greater purpose and reach out for the assistance of someone like you who has enough to give and enough to share? Because the one thing in my experience being raised by strong Black women is sometimes it's hard for them to be vulnerable, or it's hard for them to lean in and lean on each other. So how do you promote that level of fellowship, especially for an accomplished woman who had it all and then all of a sudden feels like, what the hell happened? How do you talk them back on track?
Yeah, I mean,
you know what I mean?
Because you went through that.
Yes, ma'am.
You went through that, right? So yeah. Yeah, let's talk. Tell us, my girl.
2 years under, let's talk about it. So 2 years underemployment, barely any income coming in, staying with family members to get through it. And what I tell you, at one point in time, I was up underneath the table in fetal position crying. It's okay.
I appreciate that.
It's okay. First and foremost, you got to let those emotions out. Right. And then you got to stand on that faith. Mm-hmm. You got to stand on that faith. There is nothing. So as part of that, then the other piece of it is you got to go through your own cognitive reframing. Right. They told you, they try to blame it on you. Mm-hmm. They try to blame it on us. They try to blame it on me.
And they take your self-worth. So you start thinking that, exactly, you start thinking that it's me, you know, and I'm not good enough and this and that. And so then all of a sudden you put yourself on an island, okay? Mm-hmm. And now Gilligan been on an island since 1960.
Exactly. Okay?
And so at the end of the day, you got to come out of that, right? Go ahead, my sister.
And no, you absolutely have it on. I isolated myself. I blamed myself. How could I not already have seen this coming and gotten me another job, you know, and all of that. And then I was like, hold on, wait a minute. These tough times, they're battles. And guess what happens to battle-tested people? They become stronger leaders.
There's no question.
So my sisters, go through the battle. Don't go around it. Don't excuse it. Learn the lessons that God wants you to learn to take into the next venture that you have with you, but go through the battle. And part of going through the battle is your cognitive restructuring. They told you you run your mouth too much. They told you you were too disruptive or this. They told you this, and they told you you didn't know how to run numbers. They lied to you so that they could keep you inside of their control and box. Now I want you to imagine not having a box. Now I want you to understand that there's so much Black brilliance out there that can help you define your box for you. A bigger box with your knowledge, with your name on it. It is absolutely possible. It's probable even. You just got to reach out. Find those women organizations, connect with the local organizations. People are there to help you. There are so many free resources. We do free training for entrepreneurs, right? We do free financial therapy. This is the other thing I'm going to ask you guys to do. Take a financial therapy class, right? Learn what's your relationship with money, because money drove me. Right. A lot. You know, here I was making over $500,000 in private equity. And now, you know, at the time, I'm not making anything for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Right. And I had saved up a lot, but I went through all of it in those 2 years. Mm-hmm. Now I'm facing debt, and I'm still facing debt. Right. But I would say that you got to do some financial therapy. because when you define your worth, you define your accomplishments, you define your value to the world by how much money you actually made, that becomes a problem. That becomes another internalized oppressor.
Okay.
And for
Excellent
me,
point.
I went to Harvard. I'm a finance person. Mm-hmm. I'm not supposed to have a bad score. Man, that score don't mean nothing. It ain't, that don't define me. I might have a bad score now. And what? And what? Right? If I choose to pay a little extra interest because I need some extra cash here, so what? We have to not allow traditional social norms to put us in a box that has us perpetuating generational
curses.
Yes. And all of that. So I just say, folks, I know I've been going on, sister, it's going to be okay. There are other sisters out here who can help you, who will help you understand how to navigate poverty, because you need to get those food stamps. You need to get that TANF because you paid interest. And I mean, you paid taxes for so long. That belongs to you too. Go get your food stamps. Go get your TANF. Go get your utilities paid for. Go get on a rental assistance program. Go get on a home loss prevention program. You pay for it. Don't be ashamed. Go get your benefits because you pay for somebody else to have it. Why shouldn't you have it when you need it? Right. But also understand what to pay and what not to pay. When I was off, I was sitting up here paying my credit cards. Why? They're unsecured. I should have been paying and putting more food in my belly, in my kids' belly, not paying for American Express can come after you, but I mean, not paying for some Visa card. I'll get to that later, right?
Right.
Understand, don't let your ego decide what you pay for. Let your need and your heart tell you what to pay for. Don't worry about some credit collection company calling you. Let go of that shame.
Right.
Let go of that shame. Get you some financial therapy. Sign up with one of those, with a couple of the women networks who can help you, and go monetize the knowledge and the expertise and the brilliance that is already in you for you.
Right. Here's the thing, though. So number one, thank you for that. That is great. And obviously there's a ton of people. No. There's a ton of people that need to hear that, right?
Absolutely.
So it's all good, right? Here's the thing, though. So, you know, one of the other things, and you created a program for this, right? An initiative, right? Black Fatherhood Blueprint. And one of the things is that, you know, there's a obviously every community has issues, okay? But when it comes to black fathers, there's definitely, you know, a stereotype that they're not around, they're not there. We even did a show, I think it was last year or early this year, going over the Pew Research that showed that, believe it or not, that there were more black fathers in the family than people give them credit for, right? And so talk a little bit about, you know, what made you start the Black Fatherhood Blueprint program and why?
Some of it's personal. I have three fathers. My mother was married three times. My biological father was a businessman and an entrepreneur. The father who raised me was a preacher, right? Mm-hmm. And the one in between, actually was a domestic violence abuser. I went through battles, right? I went through battles as a kid. And I looked at the impact that each and every one of those fathers, my fathers, had on me. And the character that the character and the trauma. And I'm like, well, I had a father. When I talk to people who don't have fathers, especially men who don't have fathers, the risk of loss, like I still went to college. I still went to grad school. I still ended up having a career. I got some therapy for that middle one, right? But with, you know, people want to act as if fathers are optional. They are not. And so my own experience of having three different personalities, right, three different situations. And then one day, one of my classmates from FAMU and we hadn't seen each other in 30 years, got together. And he says, I just took over a fatherhood program in such and such state and blah, 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 blah. I was like, okay, great. I said, what you doing with him? He says, I'm telling them they got to go be fathers for their kids. And I was like, you did what? You told a black man that you just guilted a black man to being a father. Did you stop to think about the guilt and that you just added onto his plate? So then we got into this debate at this really nice restaurant. And after that, I was like, oh, we're doing black fathers, right? Got the money, went to the summits, went all around the country to examine black fatherhood program. And I said, oh my God. Then my training and my understanding of the impact of racism, but the impact of slavery on tearing apart the family.
Correct.
That was
correct,
right.
Correct.
So if you want to endanger black people, what do? You endanger the black family. Mm-hmm. To endanger the black family, what do? You take the man out of it. And you do that mentally. You do that physically. You do that from an economic standpoint. And that's exactly what we found with all of the research, is that black men who have been criminalized, dehumanized, and systematically removed from the family, endangering the black family. Now when you start going into the statistics, now you understand why we have a high incidence of violence and suicide in the black community, especially with our black brothers. Mm-hmm. And my mother is a black male empath. So, of course, I learned that as well. So here I am, a black male empath, working in D.C., where 60%+ of children are born to single mother households. I'm watching the violence all around me take the lives of brothers. I'm watching, you know, suicide rise in young kids and black families. And I'm like, Greater Washington Urban League, what are we doing? If we're not in this battle, what are we doing? So we got a call from United Way saying, hey, we want to partner and go for this grant. And we did. And we partnered and we went for this grant. And so we got a $5 million grant from the Greater Washington Community Foundation, which is running a health equity fund. And we are fundamentally about him. And that's what makes us different. We want his wholeness and his wellness. It doesn't do any good to just say, hey, here's how you raise kids, here's how you pay your child support, here's how you try to have a good relationship. If he's not healed from the generational weathering, from all the trauma that he's experiencing on the inside, if nobody says to him, brother, you are smart, you're brilliant, you're loved, you're needed, and you are not optional, then how do we expect fathers to actually feel valued and want to go back to that situation, want to be included in their family, in their children's lives? We can't. And guess what? When we did this Tree of Life for the Greater Washington Urban League, we said, oh, okay, we talk about wealth and wellness, but that's not the end of it. If poverty didn't kill people, if poverty didn't lead to death, would we be caring about wealth and wellness? So the ultimate fruit, the ultimate goal is to reduce the unnecessary loss of black lives. And what better way and what more impactful way to do that, sustained impact way, than to put the black father in a whole, as a whole and well person back into the family, married or not, that's not our issue. But you... We have watched these men cry. We have watched gatekeeping. We have watched them be put in jail for just having a low income. We have watched them try to figure out how to do it when they didn't have a model. And yet we want to blame them. So I'm sorry, as a woman, as a black woman, I certainly hope the father of my children is well enough to be a daddy.
So, Kimberly, let me ask you this. So what is the program specifically? What does it specifically do?
So it's called Black Fatherhood Blueprint, and okay, it is a comprehensive program, i.e., we have a cohort of training. So they get childhood development, they get healthy relationships, they get finance, and they also get the economic mobility piece, which is financial empowerment and therapy, and workforce development. So really helping them career advancement skills, right? So that's a whole set of classes that they take. They also get, we partnered with the Association of Black Psychologists, and we're providing healing circles. That is an opportunity for them to actually have a safe space to emote, to get in touch with their emotions and their trauma. We also have partnered with the Concerned Black Men, because one of the things we learn from men is that being in relationship with other men who are going through the same thing makes a difference. So Concerned Black Men will be running monthly support groups, small support groups. So get together and watch football, talk about issues, health issues, child issues, but be there for each other, creating a bond. We also have hired Nelson Mullins as lawyers who will be helping folks, helping our fathers establish paternity, get visitation, address any kind of legal issues that have come up through their process, but actually have representation in that courtroom and not go by themselves. We will also be hosting Daddy Days. So these are opportunities for daddies to come together to learn how to interact with their children, especially for those who've been maybe separated from their children for a minute, right? And they will also have therapy. We have a family therapist, and they'll get therapy. Also, we are going to provide, it's not the big part of it, but we are going to be providing financial assistance to bring down arrears or to help them pay for their child support, to eliminate some of the pressure between them and their co-parents, with the idea then that the co-parent will join them in creating a parenting plan. So as you can see, we've probably tried to think about as many things as we could do under one umbrella. But right. The other piece is, I think the final piece is, we are giving them a wellness card. They get $1,000 to go take care of their own health. We want them to go. And part of the program, you have to go get your annual checkup.
Got it. That's awesome. And then just real quick, because I know Chris got something, but real quick, tell us the effect. So what's the percentage? Talk to us a little bit about the impact that this program is having.
Well, we're just starting it. We just launched a week ago. We just had an induction on our first 20 fathers, and it's already having an impact. The tears that the brothers get to let go of, the shame that the brothers get to let go of, the brilliance and the that they get to focus on, and the bright, and the light at the end of the tunnel that they get to focus on, the reduction in the stress that these brothers are experiencing, the reconnection with their children that they couldn't do on their own, the getting back, having legal representation and not being railroaded by the system anymore. Talk about stress. Talk about release. Talk about healing. If we can heal our fathers and we can put them back into the family, we can take the Black family off the endangered list. That's our goal.
I am a court-appointed special advocate for children that are abused and neglected. And what you're saying is absolutely phenomenal and groundbreaking. Do you have a vision to be able to get this going and then cascade it further than just your local community, your local area? Is it something that you see? Because I see everything you were saying resonates here in the Dallas area, and I'm sure where I'm from in Illinois, and every place else that needs this type of emphasis, because the Bible says you do better when you know better, and you're teaching them to know better. My question to you is, so I'm going to have you finish this sentence. If you want to build lasting change in our community, you must what?
One, go together.
Okay.
Two, bring in all of the brilliance under one together. You cannot, nobody knows all the, has all the expertise in one. So for us, we absolutely expect to create for lack of better term, a product in a box, and teach others to do this work. So we have built the foundational documents. We are paying for Maya Tech, which is a Black-owned research and program evaluation, to come in and do a program evaluation. When you have a second, a third-party organization research your impact, now it has the ability to get more funding, and it can, and it's proof in the pudding that it works, right? And so we brought in Accenture. Mm-hmm. To help us actually design the program, research it, what works, set up the operations, right? We've brought in Association of Black Psychologists to help us with our language. We brought in the Concerned Black Men and Other Brothers to make sure that we always had the voice of the father at the center of what we do, even though it's there's half men, half women running this. Mm-hmm. So you cannot create an It is a complex issue that is criminalized and dehumanized men. Mm-hmm. You have to bring in a multifunctional team of experts, mm-hmm. right? And you have to bring in the community as well. Because we could do all of this work if the community folks aren't saying, hey, Tony, I think this program's right for you. Tony's not coming over here. So we're going through our churches. We're going through our barbershops. We're going through our other organizations that we're partnering with to give us credibility with the fathers, to trust us to come and share, and trust us that we have built a safe space for them. So when I tell you, community, you have to have the community backing you, and you have to bring in your cross-functional experts to do this.
Right. Here's the thing, though. Let me just throw this in, right? Because one of the things, and look, you just broke it down in terms of the root causes for the percentages in terms of Black fathers in a home, right? And then obviously we can dive in terms of they may not be in a home, but they're still taking care of their kids and they're still showing up and stuff of that nature, right? So, you know, the stats, and you talked a little bit about it, it's like 44% of Black families have a father in the home, right? Mm-hmm. Long term, right? But to be fair, that number has increased now to like 50%, right? Now, it's not where it needs to be. White families have about seven out of 10 fathers in a white families in a home, right? Now it's like 5 out of 10 for Black families, right? Now, obviously with all the legacy stuff and, you know, slavery, Jim Crow, criminalization, mm-hmm. and all those things that you talked about, right? But even with that, still, and I'm not saying this is a improvement, I mean, a great thing, but think about it. It's 50% that are in the home, even with all that, that everything that we've gone through and been through and continue to go through right now. So we still got a lot of work to do. And you and your team is putting together, have a great program to increase those numbers. And more importantly, deal with a lot of the root causes. One of the things, though, that, and you saw this a lot with the Charlie Kirk thing and this and that, you know, they're out, you know, one of the reasons that Black people aren't further ahead because is the Black fathers and all these type of narratives that are written, right, in terms of this is the cause and that, and they don't speak about the things that you just got finished talking about. But one of the things I always hear, now hopefully you could provide some context to this, is that, okay, yeah, we separated them 400 years ago. Yeah, we did this and we did that, but that was years ago. Why can't in 2025, you know, these numbers and this and that be better, blah, blah, blah. Can you speak a little bit in terms of the generational, what's the word I want to use? I want to say violence, but the generational weathering, thank you, and how it has effect long term, and the you know, because everybody acts like, you know, once Abraham Lincoln, or excuse me, when they came up with the 13th Amendment in 1865, that everything else was beautiful since then. All right. And, you know, and to be fair, it was only been 60 years since they had the civil rights. I mean, let's just be fair. But look, I love to hear your thoughts.
No, you're absolutely right. And that's why we created the program the way that we did. That's why we're partnered with our Black psychologists and psychiatrists, because we need to understand the post-traumatic slave syndrome. And we need to understand the, you know, how generational weathering. Believe it or not, trauma embedded in your body gets passed on through generations. It becomes part of your DNA. It's in our DNA. Mm-hmm. Having to live the impact of trauma is in our DNA. That's why we live smaller, shorter lives. That's why we live more stressful lives. I guarantee you, somebody who hasn't come from an enslaved background does not have the same level of stress and fear or you know, anxiety in living in America than we do. It's in our blood. It's in our system. And you can't get that out with medicine. You can't get that out with no surgery. You can only get that out with therapy. And with cognitive reframing. And so, one, we have to have the fathers reframe it for themselves. And what we say is we want Black dads to go through a self-driven healing process to replace societal distortion of their self-worth and sense with their own sense of empowerment and love for themselves. And when we can get brothers to replace what society told you about and what's been embedded and passed down through generation and now lives inside of your gut as internalized oppression, if we can get to that gut, that internalized oppression that is inside of you, and we can instead replace it and have the spirit that was put inside of you before your mama even birthed you, you become self-propelled towards your own brilliance that you were given.
Awesome. And
so, yes, it lives inside of you. Harm, they know this. They have studied this. Harm lives inside your DNA. And it cannot just be getting rid of because it doesn't exist. But here's the other myth, Tony. The system still exists. It's still doing it.
Right.
Absolutely.
Plantations
just changed.
Yeah, it's my girl. You hit it right on the head. I'm glad you said that. Right. I'm glad you said that, right?
Right.
But they wanted people to act like it's back then, right?
Absolutely.
But it's still there, right?
No, it's still there. The system is still there. There's still child, you know, welfare laws that still say, well, the woman can have the money as long as the man's not in the house.
That's right.
Well, how does that make sense?
That's right.
Right? There's still laws that, you know, will you will go in there. Let's say, Tony, you got plenty of money. You can pay for your kids if you want to. You go into court, they still will criminalize you, even though you're paying your child support.
Right.
Right.
Because somehow
right.
something happened while you broke up with that woman.
Right.
Right.
And it's because
right.
of that, you're not supposed to be able to have equal rights. You got to right. go get a lawyer to have rights that should be yours just because your
innately.
Seed.
Yep.
Got it.
Right?
Got it. So, well, listen, my sister, I mean, look, we could be here with you all day, all right, because you got a wealth of knowledge, you're very accomplished, but more importantly, you're passionate about helping others, and like you said, that's your God-given purpose. So the question, that final question we have for you is, how can a Black Executive Perspective podcast help you, my girl?
One, we have a podcast for the Black fathers. You talked about narrative. And we need to get, so part of the reframing isn't just the reframing of how you feel as a Black man about yourself. Part of the reframing is to reduce the violence against you, violence against your mental health, violence against your psyche. And that means we have to fight the imagery that people have out there about Black fathers. So we're doing podcasts. We are partnering with United Way and actually putting a different view about Black fathers out there.
I love it.
And so, and we're putting different language. Please, you know, like people, you know, want to use this. Papa was a Rolling Stone. No, he wasn't. He wasn't a Rolling Stone. He was a person who was hurting, who was looking for love in a lot of different places. Didn't mean to hurt them other people. Now, don't get me wrong. There's some evil brothers out there. I ain't going to say not everybody was, you know, has excuse.
Right.
But there's some folks out there that they're just hurting. If we could deal and we could expose the root cause of Black male harm and hurt, we can change people's minds. If we can humanize and show the humanity in Black fathers, we can change the community's minds. If we can get their own communities behind them, we can create a movement that says, the myth about the Rolling Stone, the absent father is wrong. Black fathers are not optional.
My sister, well, look, we know that. We love that, and we love you. Thank you for coming on the Black Executive Perspective Podcast, sharing your perspective. And more importantly, is it real quickly, is there any place, where can they follow the podcast?
Yes, so we're going to start airing them. But right now, you can go to gwl.org, our website, and you can, if you click on our family wellness, you can see all the work that we're doing with the Black Fatherhood Program. And we will be putting links to there to our podcast. We're starting to edit them. We've got like 50 stories now of Black fathers talking about their fathers and what they learned from their fathers and what impact. So we're going to start, we're editing all of that now. But if you go to our website, gwl.org, please also, if you feel to give, please give. There's so much more that we need to do. Right now, this program is only going to be able to handle 150 men. We want to handle 1,500 men.
Yes.
So
yes.
If you feel so inclined, please go to gwl.org and hit the donate button. And we appreciate you, Tony, for getting us exposed to so many folks. And thank you, Chris, for encouraging us and affirming that we need to take this to Dallas.
Absolutely. Look, listen, when somebody asks me in the future, who the hell do I think I am? I'm going to say Kimberly Corbin. Because you're you've done everything and seen it all and been through it. Man, so you are absolutely a shining star, male or female, black, white, Puerto Rican or Asian. You absolutely are that
thank
one.
You so much.
And I appreciate getting into your space.
You know, that's right.
Thank you.
Kimberly Corbin, thank you for appearing on a Black Executive Perspective podcast, my sister. Now I think it's time for
Tony's Tidbit.
And the tidbit today, true empowerment demands that we dismantle the lies told about our people and rebuild them with truth. When we replace myths with stories of strength, family, and resilience, we're just not shifting perception. We're reclaiming our place in history and shaping the future unapologetically. And you heard a lot of that from our sister, Kimberly Corbin.
We definitely always like to end our episodes by reminding you to tune in to our powerful segments, one of them being Need to Know with Nasinga, where Dr. Nasinga Burton provides poignant and timely, powerful messaging that shape our community and our world. Don't miss when Dr. Nasinga Burton from a Black Executive Perspective podcast brings you Need to Know each week. I think it'll be today, in fact, or I think it'll be definitely today or the next day when you see this. And you want to tune in, you don't want to miss it.
Absolutely. And don't forget to check out our next Pull Up Speak Up, where our roundtable tackles the most bold and provocative issues that's happening today. It's real talk, real perspectives, a call to action. Don't miss, you can watch it here on the Black Executive Perspective podcast, Pull Up, Speak Up.
We'd be remiss if we didn't remind you to incorporate our call to action, which is LESS. Our goal is to eliminate all forms of discrimination. And to achieve this, we're asking that you embrace less, LESS. The L is for learn. You want to educate yourself on social and cultural nuances to broaden your horizons and be a better person.
And after you learn, you have the letter E, which stands for empathy. Now, since you've learned about different people and different cultures, now you can be more empathetic to what they go through because you can put yourself in their shoes.
The first S is for share. Share your insights and enlighten others. Don't hide it, divide it. Whether it be a program, a podcast, or any way, make sure that you cast that light far and wide.
Absolutely. And the final S stands for stop. We want everyone to stop discrimination as it walks in your path. So if Aunt Jenny or Uncle Joe say something that's inappropriate at the Sunday dinner table, don't sit back and laugh. Don't sit back and be quiet. Say, Aunt Jenny, Uncle Joe, we don't believe that. We don't say that. And you stop it right there. So if everyone can incorporate less, LESS, we'll build a more fair, more understanding world. And guess what? We'll all see the change that we want to see because less will become more.
When we enjoyed you on this episode, we want to encourage you to tune in to future episodes and check out our previous episodes. There's some good ones in the vault. Go to the website, sign up for the newsletter. Make sure that you reach us where we are and review us and let us know what you'd like to hear about. Subscribe and make sure that you're checking us out whenever you can. Tony, where can they find us?
Hey, my friend, you can find the Black Executive Perspective podcast right here on YouTube or wherever you get your podcast, like Spotify and Apple. And don't forget to follow us on our social channels of LinkedIn, X, YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram at a Black Exec. For our fabulous guest, Kimberly L. Corbin. She was fantastic. For the co-host with the most, my boy down in Dallas, Chris P. Reed. I'm Tony Tidbit. We talked about it. We learned about it. We prayed about it. We're going to continue to strive and thrive about it. We love you. And guess what? We're out.
A Black Executive Perspective.